Hello and welcome to episode 368 of the Spitballing Pod. I'm Luke Byron, joined as always by Tom Kennett and Jack Harper. Plenty to get into this week. All three of our sides got a win at home, while Man United again lost on the road and Spurs again got a result against the champions. How are we doing today?
I'm doing excellent. You all right?
We're getting there. We're getting there.
We just had 30 minutes of Byron. Tell us about his weekend.
He's just got off the therapy couch and we can jump back into a podcast now.
Yeah, I actually removed that analogy I made the other week where, actually it was one move, it wasn't you here. When Connor was on, I had this whole analogy about being on a couch in therapy and this, and then it didn't hit in the room, so to get out the final leg.
I was about to say, I listened to that pod, I don't remember that. Yeah. All right.
No, he gave me a look of like, I appreciate the effort.
Let's wrap this thing up, he said.
Yeah. The Christmas logo is back again for everyone to really get into the festive spirit.
It's magic, that.
Thank you to everyone that listened to us enough to have us feature on their Spotify Wrapped. Great seeing all of those. If anyone else wants to tweet theirs at us, we'd love to see it. But we will kick off today with the premier attraction on Saturday night. That was the Battle of the Uniteds. Don't call Man United United in front of Newcastle fans because that doesn't go down well, apparently. But
blimey.
Newcastle did rise into the top five after really overwhelming a very poor Man United side at St. James's Park. Anthony Gordon's close finish early in the second half was all it took, and Ten Hag's side never really looked like fighting back. Nick Pope went down in injury time late in the game and will now be a long-term absentee. But all eyes were on the away team's goalkeeper after his shenanigans in midweek. Let's start with Onana. Quite frankly, atrocious away at Galatasaray in the week. I don't know if either of you watched that game. When Hakim Ziyech is making you look a fool, and that wasn't even the most disgraceful thing over the course of that 90 minutes, so I want to make sure I mention something. Yeah, horrible. Ziyech cashes in about one of them a year, like a money in the bank contract, and he cashed in one of them on Onana. Very, very bad.
Yeah, I mean, what can you say about him? He's to the point where they probably are going to have to drop him. And I know nothing about the backup goalkeeper, but like, this guy is so bad, shot-stopping-wise, and not even that good of his feet. I mean, like, He's obviously got some real ability with his feet, but he's also got a blunder in him as well.
I mean, on a Kepa scale, where are we sticking him? Who's worse?
I would still probably rather him than Kepa. There's been a lot of revisionism around Kepa because we aren't seeing him weekly anymore.
Yeah. I only need to see him be bad for a little bit longer, though. That's the only real thing. It's only because I have a small sample size of an eye being bad.
I would say with Kepa that you didn't get the howling errors so consistently.
Yeah.
He would just not save stuff he should save. Onana's not saving stuff that anyone could save.
Kepa spread out the howlers a little bit more.
Yeah.
Well, I think the stuff about his shot saving percentage, which is never good when the manager's reading into that, or at least telling us about it.
Yeah, no.
He's in that fuck it, it's Kepa range, where Kepa's shot percentage shot right up because people just shot from anywhere on the pitch because they'd seen that something could happen here.
I'm amazed people haven't already done it more with Onana. Just even in his first few games, there were a few that were like, I'm not convinced here. And I was just, amazed that people weren't just pinging him.
He plays in Sunday League and he's getting the keeper's dodgy here chance. Do you know what I mean? Reading those shots down. It's so embarrassing whenever you hear that.
That would rattle me so bad. If I'd get so rattled.
It'd make you so much worse.
I'd make Ramsdale look composed. I'd be like, all composed, you'd be gone.
What I did want to remember was Garnacho did score early in that game to put United ahead. And their fans had obviously been whistling and screaming the whole game to that point. Garnacho was shushing them, cupping his ears, which I do like. I do like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you said Anthony was behind the goal praying to the home fans and apologising for the celebration. He's genuinely, he's doing this. He's praying at them and doing this. And Bruno joins in as well, apologises for Garnacho's celebration.
What?
It's the most shambolic thing I've ever seen on a field. And I saw Bissouma do a lap of honour six games in. could not believe it.
I haven't seen this.
United fans are genuinely annoyed with Garnacho, if you look online, for showing some personality on the pitch, something the rest of their wingers should maybe try and do.
I love a bit of that. I just don't...
I thought that was also the done thing in that sort of environment.
If they're going to whistle your game, then absolutely you silence them and you do it. I don't know if they thought that suddenly...
Everyone's going to go, you know what, they've asked us, so we'll bite down a bit.
Even just you don't celebrate, you get on with the game, and they thought that Galatasaray fans were suddenly going to go, call it a day then.
Yeah, fucking hell, that's one of the most gutless things I've ever heard.
Yeah, you need to see the clip.
Jesus.
I saw someone say... he's not going to be on anything else, and he wants to be on one of those respect compilations at the end of the season where he's going to be the thumbnail praying to the fans. It's so, so bad. Ten Hag said pre-game, players always need trust. I just explained he is, after Alisson, the best stopper in the league from preventing expected goals. You deserve to play. And I think he actually merged two stats. The one that he was second in was he was behind Kaminsky of Luton for the shot save percentage. The XG one maybe is right, but...
I mean, when you've got fail comps 4 minutes long and we're not even at Christmas yet, just from this season alone, I keep seeing that one where he dives backwards onto his arse on the floor when someone's running through. I just can't... I mean, I know Kepa's bad, but I've never seen him do that.
I'll never forget seeing a Bruno fail comp on my timeline and clicking it, and it was 20 minutes long. There was like the hair one that was like 2 hours.
The hair was like an hour long. Jesus.
Onana was flapping from corners. In this game, Dalot knocks one over his head and nearly into the net just to prevent him from touching it. So you can't tell me that the players have trust in him.
Yeah, it was hilarious when the commentator's like, do you think that's a sign they don't trust the keeper? It's like, I probably didn't need a sign. I could have told you that. Yeah,
we don't know yet if he's going to go to AFCON in January. It's basically on him and whether he decides to. If you remember, the fallout from the World Cup was he wanted to play with his feet. And the manager
did they send
was like,
him home?
Yeah, they did, yeah.
Yeah, that's insane. Turns out, I've had a point.
Drinking a bit of song, wasn't it? Is the manager.
Yeah, they were, weren't they?
Shambles.
I think it was.
They rightfully replaced De Gea. I do think that every time he makes a mistake, and I've brought this up before, it's, you know, De Gea wasn't this bad. They needed to get rid of De Gea.
This man
still doesn't have a club. It just seems this guy wasn't the answer. And I said this about them before. It's like they're playing like a football game on the computer or whatever, and they signed the highest rated player rather than the one that is the best fit, because they've got a keeper that is a ball player, at least that's what he's billed as, that's what his strength is. And yet they've got midfielders that and defenders that aren't capable of taking the ball on the turn. I don't know what they're drilling, because they seem to not know how he's going to play it. And last season with Ramsdale, it's a bit more open-ended now with Rea, but I can see the kind of patterns forming. I knew that if the keeper had the ball at his feet, Partey was going to drop between the centre-backs to receive the ball, or the defence would stretch and he'd play that chip ball to one of the fullbacks every single time. It was clearly something they'd worked on in training. If it was in his hands, he would do that one like Alisson does across his body to Martinelli, like you do with Salah.
Or to Man City.
There are some injuries to the United back line, obviously, but part of the squad building is to ensure that your backup is at least the same profile of player. Even just a slightly worse version is how it's supposed to be. Ten Hag's spoken about the hand that he's been dealt this season, but I think I saw a journalist say this: he's playing every hand badly regardless of what cards he's dealt. Onana isn't the biggest issue in the side, but he's not a strength either. There's so much going wrong here, and they don't know what he's going to do. The uncertainty is going all the way back, and yet Harry Maguire is still the one that takes most of the flak.
Yeah, it's starting to change a little bit, that, isn't it? That's starting to shift, because some performances from some players have been so bad that even he can't. And he has at least stood up and been counted in a lot of these games. He hasn't been a disaster.
I saw just before we came on here that Ashley Williams, who's now made himself part of Rio's, that five network that he does, and anyone that chooses to associate themselves with that awful, awful bloke they have on that channel... that's already a red flag in my eyes. But he was on there saying, people are saying Maguire's been good, blah, blah, blah. And he's blaming Onana's form for Maguire being there. he's saying that he's hiding, he doesn't want the ball and all of these things.
Same Maguire doesn't.
Yes.
So that's why Onana is...
It's,
bloody hell.
It's either...
He's got a personal beef with Maguire.
It's right? either being desperate for clicks, or I know that channel just hate Maguire because what his agent slid in Rio's DMs to call him whatever he called him. Oh. Probably didn't need to say anything about Maguire to warrant that. And I think it's just the easy... If I ran a Man United fan channel, I needed clicks, Maguire would be the first person that I would start going for.
Yeah, of course.
So it's an easy way to do it. Yeah, Onana in this game, right from the jump, stick it on him, and then they knew that... On the end product here, when you look at the goal, it's nothing that he can do about it. But... That doesn't mean he's had a good game or he wasn't at fault for the game or all of these things. The feel of the game is changed by him being in the net.
Yeah, I
didn't think, I mean, where'd you start? I didn't think it was his worst game he's had for them, but probably partly conditioned by the midweek howlers. Then that kind of set the tone for their confidence at the back throughout this whole game. But in fairness, you were watching thinking, I don't know how this is only 1-0. Because Newcastle absolutely hammered.
Well, they didn't get enough on target. The shots they were having, they were going to be dragged wide or at centre back or all of these things. Because Isaac has one from about 8 yards out that he just drags wide.
I tell you how bad United were and how bad they are at the minute is that in any other context, I'd be going, this team is not going to win this game because you can't waste that number of chances. You're going to get found out. The other team's going to go and break your heart. I never for a second thought United were going to. And that's kind of been their brand. That's been, if they don't deserve it, they'll still get a result. And I never once thought United were United them.
The informed team in the league as well, everyone keeps telling you.
Yeah. I mean, and when you sort of, when you tried to pick holes in that argument, you're like, well, they won the games, didn't they? I was like, yeah, but I don't know, narrowly beaten... I realise what I'm about to say. Narrowly beating Fulham, narrowly beating Luton, who we didn't beat. I realise how this sounds. I just scraped past Fulham as well. But I don't know. They've got some more problems than we do.
Yeah, and I guess we should know at this point that them in away games against what they stretch it to the top nine now because they can still do it and the stat still sounds just as good. But yeah, I think they showed Keane it yesterday and he asked if it was real, the graphic that they showed him. And I forget it each time because I go into some of these games feeling like they could do something here. The Newcastle one, like, yeah, I kind of thought that on the counter-attack, particularly after Newcastle weren't taking their chances earlier, that they could do something. When I watched back Rashford's performance, and we're going to speak about him in just a second, beyond words.
Yeah, I mean, Connor said he dropped an all-time bad one in midweek. I mean, I think this might be worse even.
He also, we were watching the Forest-Everton game, said he needed... Forest for a win. He's like, there's one more actually in there. So I asked, he's like, oh, it's United. that's not a little thing.
That's the clincher.
So I said, the cash out doesn't seem very good. Oh yeah, I need United to beat Newcastle.
Yeah.
There's a clip going around, isn't there, of Rashford?
Yeah.
I don't know if you're going to come onto it.
No.
It's when he was a player. I can't remember. I think it might be Gordon. Just runs past
Livermento.
Livermento.
I mean, which time?
And he just leaves him.
Just
strolls around. Doesn't even try. You can see the shrug in his shoulders. He just stands rooted to the spot and watches him run on.
Yeah, the professional lip readers were out in force yesterday. People seem to have settled on Rashford saying, "What the fuck am I doing here?" when he got subbed off yesterday. He definitely says, "What the fuck?"
Yeah, I'm going to say, "What the fuck?" is definitely there.
Can see why Mount wanted to go and join them, to be fair.
He's injury plagued. We don't know what he's going to be like in that midfield.
If he had stayed fit, I think we're all agreed nothing would have happened. So just say it's still shit.
Let's talk about Rashford and Livramento combined, because if we were talking about players stepping up when there are injuries in the team, then Livramento would be a great place to start. And Newcastle identified that they need a successor to Trippier, but also they've got someone here that's better than Dan Burn. I think he's, even without the injury, is the key thing in this
side. One of the funniest parts of this match, watching this guy have an absolute stormer and the commentator going, he's going to have a decision to make as to whether Dan Burn comes back in. So, what?
Yeah, every time he's, I think he started two games in the league now this season, and I think he's got man of the match each time he'd played prior to that.
It's a bad look for Lewis Hall. Sad to see that. I mean, we had great hopes for him. Hopefully, they don't use the buyback now, seeing as he's just not playing. We need to keep him.
Don't rule it out.
Yeah.
they were chasing the game again. They were struggling against PSG where they were 1-0 up, but people were out on their feet and they still didn't bring him on. So I don't know what they think about him. Yeah, Livramento was one of Newcastle's best players on Saturday. Rashford, obviously, one of United's worst. I would begin by saying that Rashford shouldn't have been where he was, because I don't care what Garnacho prefers, where Martial or Antony prefers, Sancho, whatever. If your best player, quite literally the face of your franchise, prefers playing on the left, play him on the left. I would understand it in a position where you have two similar players in terms of ability. So we did it with Barnes and Gordon, where we were saying, which one for Newcastle? Yep. And we kind of said, whichever one on the day, how kind of prefers there. This is like so blatantly obvious which one you should have in that position. It's not like there's two that you just have to have on the field, but it makes no sense to hinder him and yourselves with it.
You've just got too much evidence of him not doing it on the right as well.
He's averaging a shot every 180 minutes when he plays on the right.
And yeah, you know, even when he's been in better form than he is now, have more confidence, just doesn't really do it off the right. And so, yeah, you'd back Garnacho, who's still relatively new to the first team, you'd back him to adjust playing on the right and see what he can do, and then leave Rashford, you know, where he should be out on the left.
Well, so much of Garnacho's game is about intensity and the doggedness and all of these things that you can make up for inefficiencies by doing that on your wrong side.
Yeah, yeah.
Because his game then, it's not technique. Obviously, he has fantastic technique, as we saw week before. But the majority of what he's in that team to do isn't technique-driven on that right-hand side. It's to be there and set the tempo and all of these things. So I think you could get a better performance out of him on the right than you can with Rashford, clearly.
Yeah, I think Garnacho probably is, again, it's a bit of a problem for them, but probably is best suited to off the left. But like you said, when you're in a situation where Rashford, one of your leading players, you've got to try and get something out of him. But, I mean, you say this to say it's still a disgraceful performance regardless, isn't it? Because he's... if he was playing on the left but putting in the shift that he put in this game, he'd be a disaster still. So maybe Garnacho's earned the privilege of choosing the position, because Rashford's absolutely stank.
And his performance is so much worse because Livramento was up and down like nobody's business. Defensively astute, Rashford didn't beat him once, didn't follow him back the other way. And he's played on his weaker side because Trippier's there on the other side, which kind of makes the earlier point that they haven't shifted Trippier to suit their new man. They've said, he's our best player there, and then we just take the next best person that can do the job there, and it so happens he's doing a very good job of it. But
yeah. I mean, he did look lightning. I mean, that knee injury doesn't look like it's had any effect, which is good news for Newcastle. And
if that holds up...
I don't blame Rashford. I probably want to chase that, I guess.
if that holds up, then it's the best business they've done since signing Bruno. Better than Isaac for what they've got.
What did
there.
They spend on Livramento?
Just under 40.
Because at the time, we looked a bit steep for a guy coming off an injury.
He literally had only played for the 21s since doing...
Yeah, exactly. It did feel like a big risk. But yeah, he looks unbelievable so far.
Yeah, he's strong. He's capable offensively and defensively. Can play on both sides.
Didn't think he'd be able to do this at left back either.
No. Well, I know he played there before because he had a very good game. I believe it was against us there when the rest of their back line was out. It might have been an Unai game or an early Arteta game.
As a sort of like long-term thing that I always think a fullback can fill in there. But if you say, right, you got to give me 10 games of this, I think you kind of regress, because it is hard to play, obviously. It's not like a winger where you're cutting inside. It is difficult to do some of it.
He's just like a monster profile for his pace, his size, his raw attributes and the style that he is willing to play. It's like he's been made to play in this Newcastle side.
Mm.
He beat the life out of Rashford effectively. He just did not want that work.
Rashford was waving the flag quite early on tracking back on him. Well, he cooked into the point where in the second half, I almost felt bad for Rashford, because then he ended up sitting quite deep. I remember at one point looking, where the fuck's Rashford? And he's basically holding hands with Wan-Bissaka, because he's then so worried that he ends up sitting back and thinking... He probably does think everyone's going to say, I'm not putting in a shift in, so I'll sit back a little bit now. But then you create the problem that you're not an outlet in the attacking sense.
Did you see Carragher's piece on Rashford yesterday?
Yeah.
That crazy stray that Martial caught in the middle of it. The worst thing that I can say about him is that he looks like Martial.
I mean, it's spot on though, isn't it? Yeah, I was watching that game thinking there's two people here that aren't trying. if I'm frank, I think Bruno falls into the same category. I was just watching, like, United have got three passengers here. I don't really know how you overcome that against most teams, but not against a good team like Newcastle.
Yeah, so he said that a local player has more pressure. You need to run at the bare minimum if the performance is going to be there elsewhere. How many times do we talk about Rashford lacking confidence? Like, at what point are the strong moments a purple patch and the rest of it is the norm?
Yeah.
Like, if I look at Saka at Arsenal, or Gordon at Newcastle would be a great example. Gordon is getting the absolute max out of himself every time that he's out there. Rashford needs the right weather, the right meal beforehand, the right kickoff time.
They couldn't get the flight up there, so they had a long journey up there.
He has to have a certain fullback behind him, a certain type of striker next to him, the midfielder behind. It's so bad. Have some shame in everything, because you can't be considered as one of the elite if you aren't prepared to grind and do all of that on top of it. I think Carragher used the example of Salah and Mane, in the two players who are two of the best wingers we've seen, at least I thought so, in the last decade in the league. And they gave you the work rate and everything on top of that. And Rashford, yes, it's so bad that even United fans aren't willing to defend it anymore.
The mention of Martial alongside him is the perfect example of English bias, even when we're slagging Rashford, because there's an almost apologetic tone when you criticise Marcus Rashford, whereas Martial, it's just like, ah, fuck him, I can say what I want, and I don't really care. And I know he doesn't have as much credit in the bank as Rashford does, but Rashford doesn't have enough that, you know, he's above criticism even. They did mirror each other in the performance, and when Martial does it, it's because he's lazy, because he doesn't give a shit. When Rashford does it, it's because he's lacking confidence or whatever. And you go, well, at what point are you, again, just showing the exact same traits as Martial is?
It's, because if he left Man United today, 90% of the clubs in world football would roll out a red carpet for him. The difference is that 90% wouldn't then have the same patience that his current club do once he's there. He left the game with no shots, no touches in the box, no key passes, no progressive passes, no progressive carries, no successful crosses.
No possessive carries.
Progressive.
That's insane.
Yeah. And no successful crosses, and 65% of his 17 passes were completed. He's playing like post-contract Aubameyang. Aubameyang was 33.
Yeah.
This guy is 26 years old. He's supposed to be in the prime of his career.
I find it interesting that we're not getting the players are downing tools narrative. Seems to be a lot of narratives around Man United at the moment, but no one seems to be broaching that subject of maybe they're just trying to get Ten Hag sacked. Because
another one.
Like, we know that you can get something out of these players, Bruno, Rashford, performance-wise, we've seen it. I know you said that's a good point about when does it become a confidence issue or that's just normal for him, but they're obviously trying to do that because the work rate that we're seeing is just completely... If nothing else, you could always say that they worked. Like, Bruno, maybe not. He'll work and then he'll moan. But in that game, there was no working. It was just complete moan.
I think there's been too many kind of moments in their bad games. So usually if you point to downing tools, it's the players aren't tracking back or the yards aren't there and all of these things. Onana kind of negates that when he gives you such a highlight moment of this is how we lost the game. So it's not one where you look back and you don't trace back that this guy lost the ball and this guy did this. It just looks so horrible.
I think you could use that as an example from the Newcastle game on Saturday, because as TK said, could have been five. They got absolutely pummeled. It was lucky that it wasn't. And I think if those shots had gone in, we are sitting here talking about down and tools, because if you look at the body language and the effort levels, they weren't there. They were just extremely lucky to come away only losing 1-0.
In terms of threat and all of the things with that, I don't know if you'll like the comparison. It reminded me of our game against you at Stamford Bridge last season, because the whole game, we controlled almost all of it. I think you had one shot in the end.
Yeah.
But it felt forever like... as soon as the game finished, I thought, okay, that was never in doubt once we had the goal, because there was nothing they were going to do. But while the game was on, it did still think...
We did have a certain summer.
Oh, how are we letting this happen? How are we doing all of these things?
I think that it's a very good example to use. I mean, it's been said on multiple podcasts. Frank Lampard's come out and said it last season. How do you motivate a team when half of them, they know they're going? And that's what you're seeing with United at the moment. It's good to draw a comparison with that, where a lot of them, I think, they're thinking, I've had enough of this. I'm going to try and move on somewhere else. I think you could probably see a mass exodus.
I'm either moving on or I'm waiting for the manager to move on.
Well, yeah.
There's a lot of...
That seems to be...
Sancho has definitely said that.
yeah. I'm sitting here till he goes.
But then a lot of this, so there has been this thing, this kind of shift I've seen online that, okay, well, if Ten Hag is wrong, then that means Sancho is right. Sancho has been just as atrocious in this whole situation.
Yeah, I think they've both been abysmal.
Sancho needed to have himself in the bare minimum of a situation, and then he could have an opportunity to step in here
exactly,
and try and do something. But yeah, he cooked himself in that regard. Question for the pair of you. Who is more likely to go to the Euros, Livramento or Gordon?
Livramento. I think purely for competition play alone.
How many fullbacks is he realistically going to take, though?
You can't rule him out with Gareth Southgate.
Yeah.
You really can't.
Because...
A guy that can play right back and left back...
It's Ponto, Gareth.
Exactly. He dreams about this kind of thing.
I don't think Reece James is going.
It all depends on his fitness at the time, doesn't
it?
But even with that, do you not think that... So say you've got Trippier, Trent, Chilwell, Shaw are probably the left backs and the right backs he likes.
He's not going to count Trent as one of them, is he?
But then if you can bring Reece James or you can bring Livramento, who can play both sides or can play, maybe play a couple of
It all depends on fitness. If Reece James goes through this whole season without getting injured, which is probably the biggest if I've ever said, but if he does do that, then Reece James is there.
If I was Gareth in that situation, I'd think he's due one.
Yeah.
That's a fair point.
I can see Livramento going just because I think being a utility player does do so much for you. He's played centre back as well. I'm not saying he's going to be playing centre back at the Euros. I'm just saying if I'm doing the squad and I tick these boxes and it's this guy, I can maybe count on. Reece James could do the checks at St George's Park or whatever and they could say, this is the fittest we've ever seen him. I still wouldn't trust him to be in my squad.
I think in the group that we've just been drawn in, I think Reece James plays it right back. If we play France in a 16, Kyle Walker or Kieran Trippier plays.
That is the thing, ultimately. Like,
which is weird.
Walker is always going to play when push comes to shove, isn't it?
So it's kind of him there as well.
Much as, you know, we've got a lot of depth, whatever, at right back, and we know who the guy is going to be when push comes to shove.
How good did you think Gordon was on the day? Because I thought it was one of his quieter games in a Newcastle shirt, but still, he's making a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's kind of adding that to his game, probably. In that sometimes, even kind of at Everton, you'd sometimes watch him. I know it's a worse team, but you'd watch him and think, he's been really lively today, but what's it been for? Whereas this, like you said, if you can get the game-winning goal in a game where not his best game in a Newcastle shirt by far, I don't know, to be honest. If he carries on that form, I think Southgate would probably have to call him up.
I think, did you see his quote post-game? Because in contrast to what we've said about Rashford, it kind of summed things up perfectly.
What?
He said, I wake up every day and I just want to be a player that the manager can trust.
Mm.
And then the way he plays is absolutely... I think he's the only player that started every game for Newcastle so far this season.
Mm.
And he looks at... He's getting himself in the right positions now. All of this stuff. I think I've seen some... hype because of some of the quotes that, what's her name, Amanda Staveley, is that her name?
Yeah.
Some of the stuff she said in the documentary that we think we've got one of the league's best players, one of the best players in the world and all this stuff. Hold our horses a little bit.
Well, naturally, isn't it? You know, when you're not sure about a player, you tend to default, what does Amanda Staveley think? And then I'll form an opinion after that. So, really.
The quotes have been coming back because they on the documentary, they were following the transfer. And I mean, at the time, it was 50 million on him, basically.
I was laughing about the fact that Chelsea were like, remember when they were going to spend 50 million on him and then Newcastle wanted
Very good performance. Very good performance from everyone, really. Isaac probably made a handful of himself, but I mean, I brought him on my FPL team, so he didn't quite do what I was hoping he would do.
When you consider, you know, they've obviously got problems of their own with injuries, whatever, it was like they had a fully fit 11 and United had half a team injured or something because they battered them. And one of the things with some of the narrative around United and their attitude, and we've spoken about it here, it's partly attitude, but it is partly they're not that good. Like, the reason you beat shit teams and you can't beat good teams is because you're not that good.
Yeah.
So it's a relatively simple one. People used to do it all the time with Arsenal, where if they went down with a game, they'd be like, oh, see, it's Arsenal, they're soft, attitude, or whatever. Like, maybe they do have a bit of a problem, like, yeah, but also they don't have that much quality. They've got some, so they can win some games, but they're never going to consistently give it you.
Well, we're also seeing, in comparison in squad building, in that these role players for Newcastle are able to step in now. I don't think when Newcastle bought Livramento, they thought long term he's going to be a guy that we can bring off the bench and he can be backup for Trippier. But they identified that in the short term he can do this and in the long term we can do that, which is perfect squad planning. And then you look in this United team and the fact that they're still saying, like, they're being linked with keepers today and they're being linked with centre backs again. I don't know who told them that Varane was going to be a regular fixture for them.
Well, it seems like he's now fit, but again, Ten Hag's had a row with him, isn't it? Because he was on the bench again the other day, so...
Something's got to be said for that, isn't it? But he's digging his own grave.
You can only fall out with so many players before you're the problem as well, can't you? Do you know what I mean?
And I'm not even saying he's wrong in a lot of these instances. Like, I do think I would be pissed off if I'm relying on Varane week in, week out, and he's not there to do it for me. I'd be pissed off if my keeper's chucking it into the net. I'd be pissed off if my winger was turning up late every week and then kicking off when I don't have him training.
If he'd been shit almost every game for me, I would probably be quite pissed off. Yeah, it's just about managing it, isn't it? He's shown no ability to manage personalities, shown no ability to coach anyone. Who's got better on his watch? There's no sign of a direction of the team. People are right to point out like how quickly Postecoglou's got a style of play at Spurs. De Zerbi, obviously, he inherited something, but he's already put his own stamp on it very quickly at Brighton. These other coaches, and he just hasn't done it, and he's been there, you know, a lot longer than he's
done. Pre-season, he said he wanted to make them the best transition team in world football.
Yeah, and you're right to point out that different players, it's almost like they've been signed for different styles of teams, and it translates because they don't know if they're going to like press from the front. They don't know if they're going to soak up and counter, like to play on the transition. It's kind of just an amalgamation of everything. They end up doing nothing.
The Antony one is the one where that kind of epitomises their transfer strategy, epitomises just the bad business that they do.
And that's the one with the most blood on his hands.
And that's so in the same circumstance, it is why managers don't have complete power or just sometimes luck goes in your favour. Could have been us with Mudryk. It could have been a very different situation where we have a Mudryk-shaped issue. I don't know where I was going with that. We could be having an issue with him and you're trying to spoon him into the team and all of these things. Now we've got a central midfield issue that
sure you don't isn't have that
quite
issue?
As glaring. With who?
$60 million down the drain.
I just said we've got a central midfield. But
I mean, imagine if you'd brought in Mudryk and you're going, Martinelli, you're really good, but we're going to keep trying to play this guy. You have a problem.
The plus side is, and Ten Hag would find this out, if you're winning games, then the noise gets a lot quieter.
Yeah. So, but you know performances have been bad. You know this one against Newcastle must have been really bad because pressure just instantly goes on Ten Hag. And on paper, they were the form team in the country. So you kind of go, well, something's obviously wrong here because how are we immediately turning on the manager? They just beat Everton 3-0. They should have got the job done in midweek. I know they fucked that up. But, you know, we kind of thought away at Everton after what's just happened there. That was going to be a really difficult game for them. Now, I still think if they don't start off with a worldie from Garnacho, it might have been a difficult game for them. But how quickly it's immediately that sort of knives out for the manager kind of tells you something about how this is going.
Well, every United player looked like they had their own responsibilities, but none as a unit. And then when you looked at how Newcastle pressed, they did it in packs. United had Maynou playing in there as a lone pivot, and he was overawed, and he was given praise for his performance against Everton, rightly so. He was let off quite lightly for his runner going over his shoulder for the third goal against Galatasaray. It just seems put people in positions where they're able to succeed. It's very easy to say, if they're good enough, they're old enough, and all of these things. But
that's a lot of responsibility.
I've used the example so many times. It took Partey a season and a half as one of the most recognised players in the position in world football to play consistently as a lone pivot. And you're asking an 18-year-old to do it in his second or third start away at St James's Park. And help these guys out.
Yeah, and look, it's clubs have done this like forever and a day, but United are bad for it, where times of trouble, whack a young player in there. We're struggling, put Januzaj in. And it's like, hopefully the fans, that will appease the fans and that will take a bit of pressure off me. And it kind of feels like he's been used for that. But, I mean, he might also be the best midfield option already because their other ones are pitiful. But yeah, you were right. They gave him no real chance to succeed in there. You would look at some of his more senior teammates and go, give me a hand here. But maybe that's part of the issue.
McTominay in there again, where they say he's in there for the late box runs. But you have to be in a position where the late box run is a possible thing. If you're not moving up the pitch, then you've got a guy in there who, for the last 5 years, you recognise is not a defensive midfielder. And because of the game state, he's playing as a defensive midfielder. It's, if we can all see it, and I know it's not as simple as you do this, you do that. There has to be some level of coaching and all of this stuff and the circumstance. But some of the issues are so glaring to us and they appear to not be that way for the man in charge.
And you wonder, like, some of it is, if they were trying to do something but failing, you'd go, okay, they just don't have the players yet, and obviously they've not spent any money or anything, so you can understand that. But there isn't. It's just sort of like, I don't know what the plan is. And it's kind of where it all started going wrong for, like, Emery at Arsenal, for example. It just, you ended up watching the game, like, at one point I knew what the plan was. I have no idea what the plan is anymore. And that was when his days were numbered. At Ten Hag, it looks similar. And as the team is becoming more in his image, he's signed more of these players, there seems less cohesion, less plan. That makes no sense. It should be going the opposite way.
Tony Adams said today that if Unai Emery was manager last season, then we'd have won the league. So obviously ignore how we got to that position and everything that happened. But
if he could have just picked it back up once you'd sorted it out.
Great player, but not someone I ever want to hear talk about. Like modern football is
it's so funny hearing him on White and Jordan in the car during the mornings. Because he just gets eaten alive.
You're thinking of Keogh?
Yeah.
No, I was Tony Adams.
I'll be honest. Conveyor belt of former Arsenal players that you could pick from with some questionable opinions.
I'll back Keown in this situation.
Keown is seems odd to say something about someone his age, but he's almost senile. You listen to him. I'm not sure where this sentence is finishing once you start.
This is too harsh.
I feel for him, like you said, because they are putting him in with like a couple of animals who are just going to devour him. Simon's just going to say a lot of big words he doesn't understand. Jim's just going to agree with everything Simon says.
I can't stand Jim. Why?
He's tough work.
The thing about Keown as well is there was an FA Cup game, I think last season or the season before, and the camera panned to a sign we've got for Ozzy Osgood, and he just kept calling him the kite all games. And the fans used to call him the kite here because he used to climb above defenders. He's known as the king. He's never been known as the cunt, and he referred to him as the cunt.
In his mind, that's a great nickname.
Bear in mind, he's been dead for about 20 years, 30 years. He's still just, the kite, there he is again, the kite sign. Brilliant, man. Great, great value.
Last thing on this game, Nick Pope is now out for 5 months. Dubravka is coming in. They've been linked with David De Gea today.
Aaron Ramsdale.
You might have to stop squeaking that chair, or I think we might not have any listeners next week.
Sorry.
Would Ramsdale be a good signing for Newcastle? Would it be a signing that Arsenal would entertain?
Do you think they'd entertain it?
I don't know. I don't think they would do it.
No, when I saw the link, I thought, would Arsenal do that? I don't think they would.
I think it's as easy as the Ruben Neves link, which I'm not sure was ever a thing. In fact, that may have inspired Newcastle seeing the links that much.
He's a good player, isn't he? Maybe with some.
Well, the whole thing with that is, I don't know what they think the Saudi clubs benefit from this. And there seems to be this idea that all of these Saudi clubs are just a hub to sort Newcastle out, when the idea is to grow that league. These players going over and saying, well, they might just go and get Neymar now. Who is that helping in that situation? It's not helping anyone. That's why those links have always been a bit weird to me. Sending them the other way makes a lot more sense than bringing players in that have been sold to Saudi.
It's tricky. A loan move, obviously, it can kind of work both ways, can't you? If you get them on a 6-month loan, you can get some exposure in the Premier League, helps out your club in the Premier League, send him back.
Would you want to loan him to someone that is fighting in around top four? Just in case.
I'm still wanting the man to stay. He's tested my patience the last couple of weeks, I will say. But
I've never seen such a meteoric decline. Just from,
we definitely have.
From hype alone.
I mean, we've already spoken about Sancho and Rashford today.
Yeah, that's true.
I think,
for a man that's being billed as England's number one for the future, now can't get a game behind David Rea, It's a weird sign.
Do you think he'd be a... I think he'd be a good signing for Newcastle, yeah. I think he would be.
Yeah.
I just don't think Arsenal would do it. Well, I could be wrong.
No, unless...
On a short loan, probably not so much this season. You probably don't think they're a contender with you.
Unless next there season, was
maybe he's not going to want to do it.
Disgraceful offer, then I don't think we'd entertain it. I said before...
I'll tell you, I just think pretty little of him, so maybe yeah. he might.
I said before that I think... the scars are still there from injuries plaguing the end of last season. That I think we could have a good we could have a good third keeper, and they wouldn't let him go this season because they're going to be so terrified of something happening there.
I think that new contract as well. That's pretty ironclad, isn't it? It would take something crazy.
I'm pretty certain that Ramsdale ends at Chelsea.
I'm
at the end of the season.
I'm liking Sanchez more and more by the week. He's nightmare fuel with his feet.
I don't think Potch
his shot stopping's good.
So you think Arsenal would sell to Chelsea? I mean, I know there's been historically they have, but it's in a different.
I think they would sell to Newcastle. I think that we're quite comfortable as a club, whether I believe it's right or not, that we back ourselves to have seen enough of this particular person that
that's fair.
We'll get the money in now. Well, I wouldn't like it because he's definitely having a stormer back at the Emirates, and he's definitely going to say some horrible things about the fans.
It's going to be some quotes.
It's going to turn. But no, I see him at Chelsea more than I see him at Newcastle. I think Eddie Howe, with the team that they've got there, unless I see them start shaping up and buying more expansive players, not that Botman can't pass over the ball, not that Trippier can't do that. It's just not something that I see Eddie Howe wanting to play as, whereas Chelsea, I think, do envision themselves having a keeper that can do a bit more of that. They've tried it with Sanchez. It just hasn't worked very well.
It has in parts, but you will remember the glaring errors, which there are a few. I guess if you're going to play like that, you're going to get them.
The issue is I would see Ramsdale as a sort of ball-playing keeper, if you will. It feels like the Raya signing has sort of damaged his image in that respect. I think people, as a wider sort of audience, I think kind of think of him as now as a liability on the ball.
I think Raya, the signing there, has raised more question marks over that.
It's like the club is saying, I don't think this guy can do it. Even though what they're really saying is, I don't think he can do it as well as this guy. To everyone else.
I think it should be mainly over his shot stopping ability. I think you get good shot stops, but then some absolute.
I think he's one of the best shot stoppers in the league, Ramsdale. I think.
I didn't see it. To be fair,
were you seeing it before this season?
No, I wasn't ever. You can rewind the tape because I've never been on the Ramsdale hype. I thought he was a good keeper.
To get on it because I'm pretty sure staying in London, you'll put the money up. I think that could happen. With Raya, I do think with what we've said this season, the feeling within the game is that he's top of the pile when it comes to playing with his feet. You'll have seen that Klopp quote more times than you can count. That it's like having a number 10 in goal. And we're starting to see a bit more of that in the last couple of games. Now the patterns are starting to form and I know where he's going to do it and all of these things like that. But probably not the week to have another whole long Ramsdale conversation. So
feels like it's never far from your mind.
That was the first thing I thought, and I think others thought when Nick Pope's out for a while, that this is a keeper that doesn't want to be a number two, that has the link to Eddie Howe.
I reckon he pushes for the move if the link gets stronger because of the World Cup.
Yeah, I don't think it happens. I don't think Newcastle would pay that money in January. Do you think Ramsdale is more or less likely to be signed by Newcastle because Eddie Howe knows him as he does? Do you think that previous experience would make him more or less likely to sign him?
Yeah, it's a good point.
He wasn't playing this way because he was playing a Bournemouth side, and then after that he was playing in a Sheffield side. So,
if Newcastle aren't in for him, that does tell you a little bit about how he's viewed, because I think if Eddie Howe does rate him and he does think he's this guy who's going to go on to play for Arsenal or whatever, I think he'd be all over it. If he didn't and he just thought, you're a good Bournemouth keeper, he's not going to go near him.
I know the relationship on the pitch doesn't seem to be there at the moment with Arsenal and Newcastle. Do you think that translates to board level, or do you think would that be a hindrance?
It's a good point. I don't think it is at this point, but I don't know. It is a bit spicy between the clubs.
It probably says as much about my feelings on Newcastle at the moment. The first of all, I went into the game on Saturday questioning what I wanted to happen. Very quickly that changed. Also, would I rather see him at Newcastle or Chelsea? Now, the answer is Newcastle, but it's not.
Close.
Yeah, it's mainly because I don't really see Chelsea getting that close anytime soon.
Save the tapes.
I see Newcastle as more of a threat than Chelsea in the next 3 years.
It all depends on how we gel. I think in the immediate future, you've got absolutely nothing to worry about. I can tell you that.
Mainly,
give it 3 years. I think that's probably when this project starts to come into its own a bit.
They best have a new manager in by then, if that's what we're thinking.
Have a couple by then, probably.
All right, let's move on. So, another week and another draw after a second half drop-off by Man City. You'd have thought the Liverpool game would have been the required wake-up call, but after not burying Spurs early, they let them stay in the game until the final whistle, and we all saw what happened there. All of the discussion pre-game was on Postecoglou's tactics, and all of the discussion post-game was about the same. What are both of your thoughts on it, and I'll see if mine align with either of you?
I find it funny how it yo-yos by everyone's kind of... And everyone's viewpoint yo-yos so much with it. It's very Gordon Ramsay, where it's you fucking donkey 1 minute to, oh, come here, it's not that bad. I think everyone's like, oh, well, it's great what he's doing with his team, with all the injuries and what he's got available. It's really, really good to see. And then as soon as they concede a goal, it's, what are you doing, Bissouma? Idiot. Yeah. Well, you've shot yourselves in the foot. And then you get the 5 minutes before they eventually score again of, oh, well, they'd be really good if they just stopped doing this stupid football. And then they'll score and it turns into, oh, and this is what they do. They keep going. I'm getting a bit sick of it, if I'm honest. Just, like, it is. I think a lot of these teams, they're getting results
against. Andrew's with you, to be fair, on that.
A lot of these teams are getting these results against. Either having off days or thinking they have them in the bag and they just pop up with a random goal because they don't expect them to be there. That's what happened, I think, in the City game. Yes, they played well.
He's just lucky.
I'm not saying that he's just lucky. There's obviously some really good coaching in there. You've seen a much more personality in that team than you do in the Chelsea team. Mm. You know, much more cohesion in what they're about than what we are. And we've been going at it for 2 seasons now. So you've got to applaud him. I'm just sick of the commentary around it. Just, they can be a team that go gung-ho. You don't have to suck them off every time that you've got five men in the box. It really winds me up.
Do you align with that?
What do you feel? I'll go after you. Go on.
Well, I mean, they've got 1 point from the last 12, which would probably be my first place to start. I think mainly my issue is that I think just whatever happens is being twisted to being what sounds good for his tactics. I thought the defensive line was deeper this week. A defensive midfielder was brought on for a winger at halftime. They were positive. They tried to be compact and then stretch the pitch for counters when going the other way. I don't think it's too much different to how a team like Newcastle would play against City or a team like Liverpool have played against City. It's made to sound like no other team plays this way against them. City regained possession in the final third 12 times, the most they have in any game this season. They were given a helping hand by some atrocious finishing, much like happened last week against Villa. I thought they composed themselves well from a shaky first half. I thought they did play out well from the back, which was risky at times. I thought it was just a fairly... I don't think there was anything that astronomical about their performance or the approach that they took. I thought it was a counter-attacking team setting up to try and beat City, and it just so happens that they are City's kryptonite.
Yeah, I'm probably not a million miles off the both of you in there. And I thought they were really good in this game, and I thought the approach was right. I think I said before, you've got to give City something to be scared of, so you can't just sit in because it's just death by a thousand cuts. So you've got to give them something, and I thought Spurs did, as they've done previously. But you are right, the sort of the yo-yoing on whether it's sort of like glorified or criticised, his approach is entirely based on sort of playing the result. But also that this wasn't, like you said, this was not a gung-ho performance. Thought they had a go, but it wasn't. But then I don't have that much sympathy for Spurs fans either, because they treat it like it's an either-or argument as well. Like it's either, right, if you're saying Ange shouldn't have played on the halfway line with 9 men against Chelsea, that means you're saying we should go back to playing like we did on Conte. It's like, no, there's a big old gap in between those two things, and that's about where you should have occupied, and you didn't. I think Neville and Carragher in particular, maybe it's because they're defenders, so I think they default to, whenever they see someone a bit advanced, Carragher's done it with us a lot, their first answer is, well, let's drop 10 yards or whatever. But the problem is, if that's your answer to everything, sometimes you're going to be right. And sometimes you're going to be miles wrong, and you've actually got to do a bit more homework, which the pundits aren't always keen on doing. So that's kind of where I'm at with it. Whereas I think it's kind of going to be an over-prescribed thing with Spurs, where every time they concede, they're going to say that this is the style of play. And in truth, even if like the Bissouma thing, that ain't part of the plan. There's no coach going, tell you what, turn into three players that are pressing you. That's a good idea. No one's going to do that. So you've got to allow for individual errors in there. And if you say, this system is meaning Emerson Royale is on the ball constantly, I'm going to say, yeah, maybe you should tweak it because that shouldn't happen. But on the whole, every team is playing out from the back and playing through. Watch like the end of like Forest Everton. Forest need a goal. They chewed off like a minute of the clock passing around at the back. It's like no one is just lumping it forward anymore, even in a context when they should. So like I don't think Spurs necessarily are doing anything like too incredible. And I didn't think they did in this game. I thought the only criticism that should be applied to them about their tactics was in the Chelsea game because they had 9 men. Yeah. That's the only time where I thought, you know what, no, you should have scrapped it.
And that's the thing. That's where these tactics lost that game, because with 10 men, they were still causing us problems.
They would have beat you with 10.
Probably.
Yeah, and I think Spurs fans are adamant against that. It's such a, I think, a ridiculous and untrue argument. I don't really think they believe it. I think it's a... I like this manager, so I'm just going to back it, we've all done, so I understand.
There's something to be said about not losing 4-1 at home to your biggest, well, to one of the most hated rivals.
The framing of it that basically, if we hadn't had a go, it would either shattered all the belief in his philosophy, that's just wrong, and also that it was basically inevitable the Chelsea were going to beat us anyway, so we may as well have a go. It's like, this is a team that struggles to break teams down.
Yeah.
So sit in, make it harder for them, and you'd have had half a chance. You still might have lost, but you'd have had half a chance. You wouldn't have gone down 4-1.
We struggled to break down a team that was stood on the halfway line with 9 men.
Yeah, exactly. Like, eventually works out, oh, this is how we should do this.
Yeah, like 5 minutes before time.
The defensive line was really deep yesterday, and it should have been. They then played the ball out well. They beat the press well. All of these things.
If you were to listen to the sort of the punch in the commentary around it, it was like they played like it against Chelsea, against Man City, and that just wasn't what happened. And it's almost selling Ange short a little bit, because you're basically just saying this one size fits all, and he's doing it like he's not adapting in these games, and I think he is. To your point though, about their lack of points in the last few games, I do think, as I said, that this. I'm probably not as all in on the praise as some are with him as some of the pundits are, but I think if they do criticise them for their style of playing some of these games, I think that would be unfair as well. I'd say the Chelsea one's the only one I apply it to, because if you look at the Wolves game, they got to the 89th minute, they were 1-0 up in a game where Wolves had been better. Mm. I know nearly is a big word here, but they nearly got a result there in a game where they didn't have many players available. They should have battered Villa in the first half, and I know they end up losing it. But that's not a style of play issue. That's if they take those chances, they do. So, and then again, this game, they played slightly differently again. So we are going to see the rest of the season. This is going to be, the narrative is set. They're not going to move from it. But everything is going to come down to, oh, Ange having them playing like this. And yeah, like I said, it's not always going to be like that every week.
We saw it for the first goal where they go, oh, this is how they play. It's a counter-attack. Other teams do this.
Yeah,
this isn't exclusive.
Other teams score goals like they do and concede goals like they do. It's not entirely based on his system.
It's just whatever they concede, it's like, oh, this is what happens when you play this way. And when they score, oh, this is what happens when you play this way. It's such infuriating narrative.
I agree with the principles of what he's saying, in that he would rather lose the games narrowly like this now, playing the way that he's playing, in that it'll stand them in good stead in the long run, because that's the issue that United have had, particularly last season. I said that they were sneaking through games, being pragmatic and not developing a style of play. And so now, 2 years down the line, when they're trying to instill a style of play, they've got two new players that are comfortable with it, or it's harder to then drill this new style of play when, if you start losing like that, well, we were winning when we were doing it the other way, so why not just do that? And you're never going to get anywhere with it. I do think that it's been slightly more nuanced than how it was explained yesterday. Neville I thought he was really bad yesterday. And I think him and Carragher just shouldn't be on together, because if you get a 3-3 game every week, then it probably is going to be good when they're kind of bouncing off each other and doing all this. But in terms of actually understanding what you're watching, and they've just announced today that they've got 80% of games moving forward, and they're showing 70% more games. If that's the standard that we're getting, on BT we had it in the United game where it was Savage and Rio and Fletch, and it was like a United fan cam channel, and they're screaming and bellowing and willing the ball into the net. In this one, they said, and Spurs are stupid enough that they'll actually go and try and win it after they equalise with City. So what the fuck are you talking about? He's had a couple of.
I heard that and I just saw the fumes rising from your head my house.
He's had some moments. Never, obviously, he's had some great moments on commentary, and it seems now that he's searching for the moments in a lot of these times. And I've done it on here when you have a clip someone finds funny, and this is a far, far smaller margin, so I can quite easily see how you do it.
Get me drunk on
it. Someone has to tell you, or you have to have enough kind of realization within yourself to say, this actually isn't good when you're doing it 24/7. It needs to be natural and all of these things. So yesterday I thought, give us some explanation as to why this works, why it doesn't work. Because Carragher, when he does some of that Monday Night Football stuff, is really good at doing the tactical stuff.
I was about to say, the only thing with him is, on comms he can go like this, but then if you follow in the weeks following, he will look at what he's talking about. If he comes in on a Monday night, he does seem to learn from it. Even if you look, I'm, I guess, in direct conflict with Carragher on this one, because he was questioning Spurs' approach in the game against Man City, whereas I thought it's quite clearly the right approach. They got something out of it. If they had just sat and defended, they wouldn't have. But he was praising them for the Chelsea one. He was saying, wasn't that great in Cavalier and stuff? And I said on here, I was like, he would not be saying that if this was Liverpool or another team.
No.
So it's kind of, he was right in the wrong game, I thought. He's kind of prescribed it in the wrong game for me.
Yeah, because I'm clear. I think at the start, I think we're all maybe a little bit old man yelling at the cloud, kind of more on the way it's being described. I don't think any of us are saying that their approach to the game yesterday was wrong. Clearly, it wasn't. And I do think on another day, they could be buried. But then City could have done that.
You've got to ride your luck against them.
They could have done that to you a week prior.
They're always going to have chances.
A far better team than,
maybe not quite as good as a couple at home, that, but they're always going to have chances. No, it's just as long as it doesn't become literally every time Spurs score, it's in praise of the style, and then as soon as they concede, you're going, well, should they change it? There are also going to be games where you are going to have to sort of sit in a little bit, and it's whether Spurs want to do that. If the Chelsea game is late in the season and Spurs have something on the line and they did that, I'm going, what the fuck are you doing? Yeah. If you're playing for a top four spot or challenging for a title, you can't tell me it doesn't become, right, we're going to sit in and get a point here. It just changes. Yeah. But because we've got this weird thing where I've spoken before where the first half of the season points don't count the same, apparently.
Well, in fairness to him, he has been trying to quash this kind of feel around what they're saying he's doing. I imagine it's very frustrating to have your entire approach, I think you just said, being boiled down to being this simple. I just didn't think it was particularly different to how a lot of the best teams in this league are going to try and face City this season, and that we're going to be compact when we need to, we're going to be brave on the ball when we need to, and we're going to have to take our chances. And the best thing about Spurs yesterday is they took their chances. Son, I thought, very clinical for the first goal. I thought Edison maybe could have done better on it because it's just straight at him.
Until I saw the replay, through. I didn't realise how badly he'd done.
That's Onana.
Yeah.
We're hammering him, aren't we? Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
When words like courageous are being fired out for a draw here, it's just, I think it's Spurs are being patronised the whole way through, and it says a lot about how they were perceived coming into this season. It says a lot about the expectations that the managers had. This is a manager that's been in the game for, 15, 20 years, and he's being spoken about like he's a rookie just because of a couple of newspapers said that he was shit coming into the season.
Mm.
On paper, though, they've got the 10th best attack in the league right now. They're in the bottom half for goals conceded. Only 6 teams concede more XG on a weekly basis, which I know is up there with the nerdiest things that have been said on this podcast. But it does point to a pattern that eventually teams will put their chances away. Now,
you're saying they're going to get worked out?
I'm not saying they're going to get worked out. I'm saying that there needs to be more tweaks still. This clearly isn't the final product, and they do still have Emerson Royal and Ben Davis at centre-back. So yeah. I can see what he's doing there. A lot of the stuff about, you know, all these injuries and players missing, they employ a hooligan at centre-back. So I'm not giving you any passes for this when he's out. The Van de Ven injury is very unfortunate for them. The rest of them, I don't think it's that different to how a lot of other teams are already this season. I think
Madison
can do that.
Does have spells on the sidelines. Not, I wouldn't call him injury prone, but he will have probably each season something like that.
At this point, if I have a serious conversation with anyone and I point to Partey being injured, no one is going to take me seriously. They're going to say, "What did you expect?" Or surely you knew that was going to happen.
I don't know if he's quite on that plane.
No, I'm saying it's the same as a lot of these players in that Romero being sent off, no sympathy there.
No, Madison that, that being, one is
Madison
inevitable.
Misses about 10 games a season, roughly. So that's, he's just got this in early. You hope that
bad timing.
You hope it's not going to happen
when
again.
He's got injured.
For sure, it was. We had two players go down in the Europa League last season, and Spurs in 10 minutes had four players go down, but two of them could be helped.
It is great whenever you do see someone like caveat, say, look, they have got injuries or whatever, because it's like saying Bloody Mary three times and then a Newcastle, Chelsea or Spurs fan will appear. Like, we've got injuries. What are you talking about injuries?
If I have to hear about Chelsea's injury list one more time.
It's getting better now.
I mean, it's also why you have 40 players, which Ziyech was talking about this week. For training, there was 38 others there. Him scoring own goal immediately after scoring is about as Spursy as it does get.
Yeah.
Davis and Emerson don't cover themselves in glory for the Foden goal. But Foden must have been subbed straight after that, because I don't think I saw him again for the rest of the game.
No, it's weird. When Spurs got back into it, I didn't notice Foden. It's really weird. Couldn't work it out.
And TK, I know you were pleased with the Lo Celso goal.
I thought he played well. Yeah,
he can strike a ball.
Yeah, if you look at, you know, we talked about how United can't build any possession. If every time Spurs got it, okay, a few too many times they gave it to Royal, but between that, if Bissouma was coming to pick it up or Lo Celso was coming to pick it up, you want to talk about on the half turn, they were great. I mean, the goal for Son comes from a nice turn from Brian Hill, and then Kulishevsky with a great ball, and Son does the rest. I mean, that's literally each player there doing their job perfectly.
Of the absentees where...
I wouldn't say that about Brian Hill too often either. That man's weak, poor
guy. Of the absentees where I can say it is hard luck. Like this exact same injury had happened to Van de Ven before. He had surgery on his hamstring before, so I know that is going to be something that's going in. The Bentancur one is so unlucky. Matty Cash, I didn't think it looked that bad. It looked more like it wouldn't give you a bruise, I thought, when I saw it in real time.
Yeah,
Spurs
rough.
Fans want that man's head. And for a team that glorifies having Romero in there and everything he does, I'm afraid to say...
Living by the sword, dying by the sword, aren't you?
Yeah. Now, Sky described Doku and Grealish as one of the talking points of the league currently. Does it feel that way to anyone else? Is anyone campaigning for Grealish to be getting the minutes here? When I asked you originally with Ramsdale and Rea, and I don't know if either of your opinions have changed on that, I won't ask you now, it's just in general, it was split in that, okay, I can maybe see why he's doing it, but I don't know which way I would go around. Doku and Grealish feels fairly clear cut for people that I ask as to who they would have in their team if they were picking it on a weekly basis.
I remember saying on the pods when it was announced that they were signing him that I don't see what he brings to this unit, because if Villa is given a free reign of give the ball to Jack.
Before you talk about Doku then.
Yes,
No, sorry, Jack Grealish. I think give the ball to Jack, see what he can do with it. He's a good outlet for us. He'll win us a free kick, this, that, and the other. In a City attack, that's not really how they play. Like, yes, they go down and they do win tactical fouls and things like that, but they're all about speed when it gets to the final third, which I don't think Jack Grealish is that well equipped to actually deal with that system. And we're down the line now, and effectively he's been replaced. They've replaced the £100 million man already because he doesn't do those things that he was done. I know there was talk of him functioning as an eight.
Yeah, well, that was what we did. Yeah. The Athletic said it when the move was first announced. I came on here, gave everyone all the info on that, and then basically they quashed that pretty quickly.
You saw everyone get him in your FPL. He's going to be in the eight. I think bagging goals.
It would have been fun seeing him there. Just yeah. because of the way we'd seen him beat a man and all of those things. Clearly, it hasn't happened like that.
Yeah, and I think what City want is byline wingers, which is pace, can beat a man, can square it, and that's how they get most of their goals. I don't think Jack Grealish is the man to do that. And I think Pep said it when he brought him on against us, which was they wanted to slow the game down. And when you're trying to beat a team that's kind of in camps, it's not really what you want. You want that fast transitional speed, don't you?
Especially if you have Foden on the other side, yeah. who can be guilty of the same thing. It's not... Yeah, if he was English and Jack Grealish, there isn't a conversation about Doku versus Grealish. It's a one-sided beatdown at the minute.
So you didn't think he did enough aside from the goal?
Yeah, I thought that was okay. And I think Doku will probably do similar in another game, and I don't think that would be the reason why I'd pick Doku. I think it's the other side of his games. Jack's spoken there, more direct and pacey. Same with us. If you put someone in those two wide position for us, you've got to be pacey and direct. It doesn't work quite as well if you have someone with a different style.
I think as well, where I know coming with £100 million price tags going to raise eyebrows, it's going to raise expectations. I don't see why people are surprised that when Jack Grealish was in a relegation threatened Aston Villa team and getting tons of space because teams were going at them, to why he isn't functioning in the same way when he's against like two banks of four, because he's playing in the City's team.
I guess the odd thing is he did look like he'd worked out to some extent last year.
Yeah.
Where it's almost like the conversation we're just having now is almost like the same one you had in his first season. Mm. And it almost looked like he cracked it last year, and now you're back having the same conversations again. It's a little bit weird. But then is that simply you bring in a player like Doku and the standard goes up again?
Yeah, that's how I see it.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels like it is to me.
Lost a lot of star points. When you do the skin and then you slip as you're getting up after it, it kind of... I've undone what you've done. Just
that adds a bit to the excitement, doesn't it? You've got really out of hand.
Oh no!
I mean, you've also got to win the game once you do that. Is your other problem?
Carragher talking from the studio as well, saying we love that slide down the camera. Come on, not today. Kulishevsky bodying Ake for the goal to make it 3-3. I wasn't doing much moving, but I applauded that. I didn't really know what I wanted from the game, was because beforehand it was, okay, either I see Spurs lose or I see City drop points. And then the draw was like, I kind of didn't get either of what I wanted. He scored every time he's played at the Etihad, Kulishevsky.
Is that right? Blimey. Nice.
Just doesn't score enough anywhere else. Arsenal fan as well.
Yeah. The not a good look for Ake, is it? It's supposed to be a... centre half who's just been bodied by a winger, basically. Not a great...
It looked bad on the first watch. The replay looked like when you would watch Takeshi's Castle and you would just see them running at one of the sumo people and they would just slap them to the side. Like, you knew it was coming. It would even be when they do the one where you have to run through the doors, you're in the little maze, and they're like, shall I just jump in the water, save you throwing me in?
Yeah.
Kulishevsky, it was like food for him, as he must have been looking at him in the air.
Yeah, I mean, not to go full ex-footballer cliche, but it was just desire, wasn't it? He just wanted it. And
but if I'm a Spurs fan, I'm
normally, if you look at that, you go, striker on a fullback makes sense. He's often the bigger man. He's naturally going to be going towards it. But this was a winger on a centre-back come left-back.
I'd be asking why I don't see that kind of play more often. Yeah, but a couple of times this season, I've said that he's looked more intense, Kulishevsky. And so maybe just there's something coming out of him. Players being bodied like that. Remember when Alonso killed Bellerin and it wasn't even a free kick? I could not believe my eyes. Yeah, literally. And Bellerin, he's in the fencing stance on the floor. He's literally knocked him unconscious.
The stiff arms when someone hits the floor is a fencing stance.
I still there were times when I think a lot of Arsenal fans did want to do that to Bellerin themselves. Him leaving has made a lot of people forget just how much he was turned on before the end. But there we go. Kulishevsky got it done. Would have liked a bit of a better celebration in the moment, because he looked like he was kind of going just full intensity, and then like he had a planned celebration and he kind of got stuck in the middle.
Give you a little LeBron sort of thing going on with his stamp thing.
I think if you're going to do that, then...
commit.
Then you have to go full calm, and then you... do that. You can't kind of do it in the middle of like a chaotic one.
All right.
Mr. Choreography over here.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, not everyone can pull off Martin Elliott Stamford Bridge when we won 2-2. But if you can, it's immortal. Simon Hooper stopping play was somehow the talking point of a 3-3 game, and I did search back through to see, because I knew I'd tweeted about Simon Hooper before, and I had.
If there's a referee, there's half a chance.
It was just easy money. When you see when there's been someone run on the pitch and like a journo has tweeted, there's an idiot on the field of play.
These City fan accounts I saw at in the Premier League and PGMOL with corruption and stuff. I was like, lads,
I've got a bad habit for doing that, but we get wronged a lot more than they do.
You don't have 115 charges over your head either.
Who's putting £10 on Grealish actually finishing that chance?
So that...
I thought he was getting caught. Who was it chasing?
Yeah.
Hoiberg or whatever. Someone was making out ground on him.
I wanted to see him miss because anything that could just fuel the agenda, because I had a couple of messages after my mine and TK's wingers list. Foden is the main one that people wanted to see in there. Some shouts for Grealish was where I really drew the line. And that would have just been fuel for the fire. So Kulishevsky equalised, then Neville's made his claim. City are still in possession of the ball. They're trying to make something happen. Haaland goes through, gets clattered by Emerson, I think it is, who can't even do that right in taking him out. Plays the pass forward for Grealish, and yeah, the ref plays an advantage, sees the ball's going to get to him, and then blows up.
I can only assume he just doesn't see Grealish.
Yeah.
Is that
so?
Has he given an explanation? I would say that's, if I'm him, that's all I've got to go with.
People
I don't think there's a player.
Been trying to make it for him. Some have said that he's actually already blown for the. He's already called for the free kick, just hasn't blown his whistle. And then he's just reaffirming it shortly after.
Don't go with that excuse, boss. That'd be my advice. Don't go with that one.
In reality, I think he sees the ball over the top, either thinks Grealish is offside or thinks it's not getting to him.
He's praying for the lino, isn't he? He's praying to look up. Oh, yeah, I thought I saw a flag there.
And then that doesn't happen. And he has one of those faces that he could have been really assured in what he was doing, and he just does not have a look of a man that knows what he's doing. I mean, he has the look of a man that, and I say this as someone that couldn't get about the pitch for 90 minutes, they can't get about the pitch for 90 minutes. Yeah. The optics aren't great when he's not caught up with the feel of play and it's going against you.
No, it's slightly slightly chubby look and a pasty experience. Tough combo. It's a tough one if you're trying to look composed.
I will say repeatedly, you can't trust a bald ref, and also you can't trust a ref with hair, regardless of depending on who we've got officiating for us. And I think both are true depending on the game as well. Pep said afterwards that he didn't want to be critical of the referee. He said, "I will not do a Mikel Arteta comment." Somehow, I mean, Arteta saw the funny side. I didn't.
So. Strange, I had a feeling you might feel that way.
Well, he's basically said, no offence, but...
I won't lose my rag like this guy did, Jesus.
Because Howe's been critical of every ref since he said you can't be critical of refs. Won't say how much I enjoyed that penalty for PSG.
Scandalous.
Yeah, I mean, I was angry about it, and then I had like a moment, and I thought, but then I didn't want that being cashed in by PSG. Like, someone else needed to get their.
Someone else should have got the benefit of it.
Yeah, pretty much. Ideally us, but I didn't think that was going to happen.
No.
We'll say now, by the way, and I'm not the first one to say this, Arteta has still not been charged by the FA for the comments against Newcastle. I can guarantee you he's being charged a week before Anfield. I guarantee you he will not be on that touchline at Anfield. And it might be to our benefit because, you know, previously that's what cost us the game. Him and Xhaka over the years. Did anyone see... I see the funny side with Simon Hooper would be what I'd say first. And secondly, can anyone try to comprehend it in any other way than what we've said so far?
No, there isn't another way other than he's not seen him. The best part was Haaland. The face that man pulls.
He's been memed up today. It's been tough for him.
Seen him in the Scream superimposed on that.
And you see people after and it's like, and you see tweets like that from him tweeting WTF afterwards with the decision. That's not even an offensive tweet. It's basically, if you've not done anything wrong, then there's nothing wrong with that tweet.
No.
And the outrage to that is, he's going to get an FA charge as well for...
Yeah. We sort of wonder why players don't show any character or personality, and then the minute they do anything even slightly. Yeah. Bizarre.
Yeah,
if that's not getting a what the fuck, I don't know what is.
Mm-hmm. When
I did see the funny side that to answer your question. That was fucking hilarious.
When he took that hairband off, the PTSD that hit me was...
scored in a game where he'd already clocked off. Already quit and he scored.
Vile.
Wish it were like that for Darwin.
I saw the tweet and it won't mean anything to anyone that didn't also see the tweet, but he had the braids yesterday, didn't he, with the two little ponytails. And there was a clip of a kid being swung around and it said Salah when Darwin misses his second open goal of the game. It's a kid just being dashed. Yeah, it's obviously easier to play City at the moment. At the moment, we're at the stage where we basically, like in boxing, say, get out the first couple of rounds and then we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
What was annoying me early on was basically Neville saying that basically City couldn't be bothered for these games at the moment, or the games weren't big enough for them yet. Can it not just be that they're playing badly sometimes?
Well, if I said the narrative was set for Spurs, it's definitely set for City. Where any drop points is just that it can't be arsed.
And Carragher basically said, they gave Arsenal a chance last season and still won it. So this season, they're going to do it again.
Just going to give you a little head start, just to get your hopes up.
They always do this. They just turn it on after Christmas.
Yeah, but as much as I get what you're saying with Neville and Carragher, I suspect they might also be right. They're not far off. You can have a bad game as well.
They get better after Christmas, but they aren't usually conceding 10 in 3 games. And there's so much dominance without any cutting edge to them, which is not something you would usually attribute.
No.
Maybe they're chucking goals into their end with set pieces, or and they had, what, 2 games last season. There was one against Everton where Haaland just was beefing with, I can't think which defender it was, but he got so preoccupied with that. But it was separated. It wasn't like a patch.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a lot of these things, if you do get a collection of games together, so having Liverpool and Spurs, they got, what, Villa next? So away at Villa, that's not an easy game. So because they're, obviously it's a condensed fit, this becomes like a bigger story than if they'd spread these games out over, 8 games between each of them. It wouldn't be a story. And it might be that those games went exactly the same way, but we're making a bigger thing of it. But also, they're so good, they set such high standards that any drop, you are going to have to look for a reason, and probably the shortest reason is complacency, boredom, whatever you want to call it.
We've got a horrible 5:30 slot again on Saturday, my arch nemesis.
Who have you got?
Villa Park.
The disgusting man.
Havertz is a booking away from a suspension, so we best hope he doesn't get that at Luton tomorrow night.
Blimey, yeah. You don't want to be missing him for that one.
Nope.
You don't need that target, man. 6'4", if you didn't know.
Is he that tall? Blimey.
Let me ask you some questions about the other games from the weekend, and then we'll clock off for the evening. Start with you, TK. Zinchenko and Trent are similar in the sense that their defensive abilities are not the first thing mentioned when their qualities as a fullback are explained.
One cries a bit more than the other as well.
I'll let that pass.
That look Byron just giving me that.
I just don't make a mockery of certain situations. Even more so this season, Trent's offensive numbers are an easy way to quieten any doubters, although you may put some scorn on that. Zinchenko, however, has never been that guy. He's not going to hit the assists and the goals that Trent does. Is there any way for him to change the opinion of the masses, or is he doomed to be underrated or at least underappreciated for good?
Who?
Zinchenko. So for all of what the negatives are for Trent, he can present a body of work in numbers and say, this is what I bring. Zinchenko isn't going to do that. Can he do anything that is going to quieten the feeling around him?
So I guess the cheat answer is score goals and get assists, I guess, is the flippant response, isn't it? careful what you wish for, because I don't think he gets, if he does have a bad game, I don't think he gets brought up quite as much as Trent does. So maybe keep where you are. I'm not really sure with Zinchenko. I think he probably needs more of a sustained run in the Arsenal team. If you look at it, he has had periods of being out, be it injury or whatever. Sometimes you've put other personnel there because Arteta's, sort of changed it. I think if Timber hadn't got injured, I think his game time probably been restricted a little bit more again this year because he was looking good to start. So as much as he's had a lot of game time for you, probably a sustained run of him doing what he can do probably would start seeing him get sort of, rated a bit more highly, because I feel like even some Arsenal fans maybe don't fully appreciate how good the guy can be in a way.
My thinking is, for one, I think if we did next international break and we're not there till March, say we were really short of ideas and we did best left backs, not even best fullbacks in the league.
Your best inverted fullbacks. Well, so, name 10.
So shit. So I think that the position that Arsenal fans, and unsurprisingly, would put Zinchenko would be worlds apart from where the common fan would put Zinchenko on that top 10 list. That I think
the
some
common fan probably won't have him on the top 10.
That's was yeah. And
you didn't want to address that. So
that was
shit.
Obviously
didn't want to consider it.
Hit my head after I
you don't,
after
you
I
don't
said
want
it.
That Chilwell Zinchenko debate. You don't want it.
I do, because it's a horrible debate for Chilwell to be in, because just about every
let me tell you, I want it. I want to see these
I'd
two
the
these two go for it.
Is there anything, because I can point to games and I can point to what he brings to the team. And I think if you asked, say Arteta could protect four players in the team, he could put something on their head, they're not going to get injured for the season. I think he puts one of those stones on Zinchenko. Because of what he can do in the build-up and all of these things. But he does seem to be addressing his inefficiencies more, which he obviously knew when he bought him. But the big games we've played this season, it's been Ben White on the one side and Tomiyasu on the other side. Is there anything he could... I don't know why he isn't appreciated to some extent, because I think you can just watch him for 90 minutes and what he can do with a football creatively is up there with a lot of the best players in this league. But it just seems he never gets... Is it we only see the clipped up moments, so it's a brain fart from him on Saturday that gets Wolves back into the game.
His big moments aren't as sort of highlight reel as Trent's been. Again, sometimes that's literally just goals and assists. Sometimes it's going to pick it up for you. Probably also the fact that, and this is unfair, but wasn't the main guy at City. So then people just go, oh, he was just a squad player at City. And it's, if you've watched him at Arsenal, you can see what they brought. But I don't know. It just doesn't really catch the eye.
We'll kick the top 10 strikers debate down the line, because I'm not sure I like the answers on that one either.
Left back just got bumped up. Everybody can't wait for the international break now.
He did get an assist on Saturday. Very nice goal, our second one.
When you do watch him, and look, that the goal he scored for you last year, I remember people saying like that was his only goal, and you're like, that makes no sense. This guy can strike a ball as cleanly as you like. And
show how good November was, that his scissor kick wasn't included in the goal of the month compilation, because watching that back last ridiculous month of goals we just had. Another goal for Havertz in midweek, Jack. Just how much of a bargain was he for 60 million?
That's what you signed him for, fair enough.
How ripped off do you feel right now?
Yeah.
Wouldn't even listen to the song. I had to include it at the end of the podcast last week.
I did smile when I heard it.
One that applies to Arsenal, City, and probably those two mostly this season. How do you find the balance between control and risk-taking? Why are sides struggling to be both ruthless and controlled so far this season? That Arsenal-Wolves game should have been about 6-0 this weekend in the first 25 minutes. But Wolves hang in the game and they get one late on and they're fighting back. Liverpool and Spurs have just done it to City. Why can teams not find this balance?
I don't know if it's keepers getting a bit better, like the standard getting higher, but we're seeing less goals. Like we're watching the Liverpool-Arsenal 4-4, and some of the goals in the finishes that we're seeing, we just don't see these days. The ball's lighter or the keepers are better. don't know what it is.
Well, we've just brought on the Bill Elzar, so that's obviously the strength in depth is obviously the main difference.
But we're not seeing... I mean, a lot of the goals you're seeing at the moment are squares and finishes into empty nets. You're seeing a lot less of the trickling kind of finishes that you used to see. So that those half chances aren't going in as much. And sometimes, even when you have them puff, half chances is all you get. I don't know if it's defenders being fitter so they can get behind the ball. They're not lagging behind in a high line, so there's more bodies. It just seems that every goal that is scored now is a good goal. There aren't many shit goals scored.
Most teams are tactically adept now, aren't they? There's good managers throughout the league, so everyone's got their system. It isn't just a lower team's just going to come in and camp and pray. They've got an actual plan. That they might be defensive, but again, they've got an actual sort of plan to them. So it's kind of another thing in football becoming more methodical, isn't it, I guess? More tactics-based, which...
I don't know if I like it.
No, well, we've said before, didn't we? Probably when, a few years ago, you probably had a bit more of a hybrid where teams were getting very tactically good, but also you still had that flair. Whereas now it's becoming a little bit more about the coaches and maybe less about the individual flair player who's going to win it on his own.
Exactly. Sort of you used to have the whipping boys in the league as well, where you could quite...
style on
happily them. Just... Apart from Burnley, obviously, but even they scored 5 goals this weekend. So
I should be feeling more confident ahead of a trip to Luton than I am after seeing.
I think that might be a you problem rather than a league problem.
Well, I saw what they did to you, and I saw what they did to United.
Oh, no, but you're top of the league. You're the main guy.
Trying to go under the radar, and it's 3-0 doesn't work as well.
Winning games, isn't it?
On top of the par.
That 3-0 at the Bridge, which was our last win at Stamford Bridge. By the way, until this weekend.
I'm sure it will come back to bite me. I'm not sure I would be as concerned if we were playing them at home. It is away under the lights is the worrying
part. Kenilworth.
Who do we have to protest to for Trent to be given the goal from yesterday's free kick?
Yeah, I think we have to make a sacrifice to the gods. We've got it, I don't know.
It's like... the Jorginho one not being given to him and it being he got his first goal at the in the midweek as well, so the boys doing their thing. You're popular this evening.
I hope that's his phone.
Are you worried about the chances Liverpool are giving up in the long run? Because we spoke about, you know, United were getting through some games and then you had to ask yourself some questions on the other side of it. Liverpool are giving up a lot of chances and a lot of goals.
Yeah, it is concerning. There's no getting around it. Fulham, admittedly, game before that, they obviously scored goals as well. But prior to those two games, struggled for goals all season. We shipped 3 to them. Could have been a couple more. Yeah, it's probably spoken about before. Very open. Don't track midfield runners at all. Harry Wilson was just running off the midfield, making breaks into the box. So at least one of the goals was a direct result of that.
Is there a midfielder of them that should be the most criticised for you? I've seen one in particular was singled out after yesterday's performance.
Go on.
Szoboszlai, I saw getting some flack online.
Last couple of games, he hasn't been as electric as he was to begin with.
It's just his defensive work rate that I've seen criticised.
It's, again, he doesn't have the instincts. You look at them and their instinct isn't to follow these guys. It's to either they just don't follow them full stop or they realise a little bit later than they should because they don't instill it. But if you don't buy an actual defensive midfielder, that will happen. That's kind of.
I saw people say he doesn't want to exert himself to run too fast, so his face changes in the fan cams. He wants to ensure at all times that he's looking as handsome as possible.
Yeah, you don't want to exert yourself too much. Come on. But if we can score goals like that every week, I'll take it.
4 great. Commentator said that McAllister had topped Trent as having the best goal of the game at that point. Would that have been how you'd have...
Trent didn't have a goal, did he?
So but at that point, they thought it was being given to him.
I think McAllister 1 is still better. Okay. Good competition, though. But yeah.
It looks better as well when it's facing directly with the camera.
Absolutely.
And see the flight of the ball. Yeah. Salah had one against us 3 years ago, but that was just... glorious.
Did you ever hit a ball like that again since?
Did you see in the Bundesliga they put some cameras in the corner flags to record the celebrations when players are running towards them? It looked really good. There's players and they're running towards corner flags.
Good job, Tim Cahill, and still going. Battering cameras.
Jack, why are Pochettino's side so ill-disciplined? Senior players as well.
Yeah. Captain getting sent off 2 games in a row. So
That armband does things to people.
The thing is with Connor G as well. Sorry, you go.
Well, I was going to say, what level of admiration do you have for him claiming he won the ball as he got up from that second book
we've
of offence?
We've all been there as well.
Doing just that, point at it. Point at it.
Doing that 5 minutes before half time on a second yellow is just so infantile. I just can't. It's inexcusable. I admire him trying to claim that he got the ball when there's 35 cameras on him that show he didn't. Fair enough.
I've got to tell you, like, Connor, whatever you do, do not do something that's going to get yourself out of this team, because as good as you've been this season and you have been one of Chelsea's better players, you're still the most droppable.
Yeah.
So they didn't spend big money on you, so you were droppable.
The thing is, Caicedo should have seen red as well. He got three really big yellows, like oranges.
It's interesting this season that it's usually the other way around when these discussions are like this. I think if you ask most neutral fans who Chelsea's best player has been this season, Conor Gallagher would be one of the first three mentioned.
He'd be my mention.
I think if you asked the majority of Chelsea fans who Chelsea's best player has been this season, I'm not sure Conor Gallagher is being mentioned in the top three. The discourse surrounding him online, discourse I hear from most Chelsea fans in person, it's like the stance has already been made on him, so you can't backtrack now.
The problem is that he's the new man. The international fans have latched on to the next English.
I don't think it's because he's likable, though. My thing towards him being one of your better players isn't that I like him in any way.
No, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying it online.
If we're doing a top three, I'm struggling to name another couple. In fact, that's just the main thing.
Conor Gallagher is probably the outstanding performer on our team in regards to effort alone. Now, sometimes it's too much effort, and he needs to rein it in. I mean, whoever doesn't book first, like Conor Gallagher, to get carded, he's an idiot. He should be doing that every game, because he does. But that's because of the intensity of which he plays at, and he will learn not to leave the leg in or not go in time his challenges, but that will come. But yeah, I don't think there's an argument. I think he has to be the standout performer.
Buddy Ashile showing there's life beyond Thiago Silva.
I told you, Buddy Ashile, when he came back,
Buddy Ashile.
We missed him. And when he came in last season, one of our best defenders.
He's the best defender you've bought in the last 3 years, and I couldn't even name half. De Zerzi just put that one.
You really don't like De Zerzi, do you?
He's everything. Every criticism that is levelled at Harry Maguire could be levelled at De Zerzi, and he's worse as a player.
It's an odd comp.
Yeah. I don't agree, but I understand your hate.
He's slow. He can't play out with the ball well enough.
The thing with him... Yeah, people do think...
I don't have much more to say.
I guess it's a summary.
I never come away from a game thinking De Zerzi was the problem.
His name fits very easily into a headline as well.
Yeah, that's bound to happen down the line. I don't know if you're going to ask me about the penalty. Are you going to ask me about the penalty?
Another question first. Should we start putting bans on players for shushing when they have no reason to be doing so? Worded that terribly. When Maguire shushed the fans in that England game last year, when he was quite rightfully being criticised, horrible.
Show some balls and shush people now.
Who's Enzo shushing?
You.
Twice.
You.
Yeah.
You.
He's looking at the camera at you.
Yeah. He knows. He listens to the pod. The thing is, you're loving Garnacho giving it to the Galatasaray fans. You love a big celebration. But that man, Enzo, as soon as he does what you like.
He didn't even
commit. You don't like it anymore.
He didn't even commit to it, for one. He very quickly pulled it away. Secondly,
just an agenda here.
It was Brighton at home. Thirdly, there is an agenda,
I mean, in fairness, if a guy actually had been signed for 100 million and largely stank and then did it, I reckon he probably would have a different opinion.
He's not been that bad. He's just not been a £100 million player. So,
And I will say, the last 2 weeks when it comes to United at Goodison and... Enzo at Brighton, charity penalties are being looked at very differently.
What, for Enzo?
Yes.
It wasn't charity. Cole Palmer wasn't on the pitch. So he had to take it.
We might need a conversation about him very soon as well, because...
What's the conversation?
What's he done now?
All he scored is penalties. And I think the chat was getting a bit too much.
It's the creativity that he brings to the team. I don't care if he scores.
I saw a tweet that said, Ødegaard, come outside.
If you dig deep enough, there will be some sort of anti-Arsenal thing in there. That's, you will find it.
If I just thought, much like his PR is on a level with Postecoglou's in... some of the praise he was getting after that City game.
I'm getting on a lot of these players.
Bad.
We didn't actually hear your thoughts on the penalty, did we?
Yeah, I was going to word it nicely than that. But
go on then, word it nicely.
What are your thoughts on the penalty?
That was much more nicely put, you're right.
It was a pen, and everyone's screaming for it, for their team.
We're screaming for a lot of penalties.
I was watching the NBC coverage, and...
He was in America at the time.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, my phone was. Yes. So it says.
It's on the floor.
First of all, they couldn't get their heads around why they given it. You could see it in real time that it was just a shoulder to shoulder. First of all, Milner's got his arm fully outstretched, which anywhere else is a foul. And then they completely missed the fact that he clipped his ankles. And if he wasn't there, then he would have got the ball.
I also think it's a penalty. So
good.
I didn't think
it was I heard the talk of it not being a penalty and assumed there was something else when I saw it back on Match of the Day.
He slides in and takes his ankles out from it. And the fact it wasn't a red card, because he doesn't make it an... He doesn't make...
I was here and then you...
He's last man and he doesn't make it.
We have also gone from Jack's going, you know, he's pushed him to... He's basically scissored him. chopped him in half.
He's last man
which
and he brings
I'm
him
thinking,
down.
I'm going to have to go back and watch this. It sounds like a different challenge to the one I saw, a questionable could be a penalty, could not be.
He slides into his ankles and...
Yeah, I didn't think it was, but you guys are soft, aren't you? You do love a soft pen.
4 minutes later, Brighton get a free kick for much less than that. And the commentators are saying, oh, well, you can't be giving those away. A silly foul to give away. And so you should be applying that to that then, because that's a silly foul to give away. Keeper was probably going to get there. Mudryk looked like he'd overrun it. So I don't understand the narrative around that. I think...
I thought it was an odd foul for if the ref didn't give it to then be sent to go and watch it. I thought that was odd.
It's a good thing.
Quite clearly takes his ankles out.
I think it's soft. It's very
if that's
soft.
Given against me, because I came away from that thinking in real time, oh, if that was us, I'd be hoping. And I saw the ankles and I was like, no, I'd probably just think you're an idiot for going in like that.
It's a good thing we weren't leading with West Ham Palace today, because you'd have been screwed watching Chelsea Brighton. The rest of us were subjected to... Were you watching Liverpool?
Huh?
Were you watching Liverpool or were you watching...
Yeah, I didn't put myself through West Ham Palace. I'll confirm that.
We need to talk about...
It's Super Sunday. Is that a game series on paper?
That penalty at the end as well, just to run it back to the Chelsea game with Colwill. On the NBC coverage, they said that a goal kick, a corner had been given. Obviously, no one saw that he pointed to the spot. So I have an absolute heart attack when it quite clearly, you see the replays, it bounce off his face and then the ref goes VAR and then points. I'm like, what? How is he giving a penalty there? I just had the worst 30 seconds ever until I then realised it was a drop ball to us.
Colwill backtracking on a celebration against a team that he played less than 20 games for.
Gave him his chance.
Nearly ruined my weekend.
Gave him his chance. Just a bit of respect.
We need to in American
Should
sports.
Should you shush? Did you want that or did you not? I can't give up what celebration you want.
In American sports, if they're stopping you celebrating, we need to go the opposite way in this country and start making people celebrate against their old clubs because it's gone too far.
Yeah,
that was too far.
I do miss Pulisic scoring for us, which is a rare occasion, obviously, and then pulling a gritty out. I do. Who's the most gritty-ball person in the Arsenal team apart from Jesus? Who would you like to do? You know, like Roy Keane.
Jesus was doing salsa dancing and he didn't score or assist the weekend. He had Odegaard in on it.
I'm talking Roy Keane on FIFA doing the cha-cha slide. Who's got the least gritty in him that would pull a gritty that you'd like to see?
Oh, it's a great question. I was going to say Declan Rice, but it's probably not him.
That would be to have a comical like
poor Mr. Basmati.
El Nenny.
Oh, that would be good. I think Zinny Chenk's pulling a gritty.
I thought
I was crying.
This is this isn't going to encourage him to come on the pod. I really think he was going to be close.
We're close to getting Aaron Ramsdale's dad on, so
me to just stop. Just
that's
putting the pod to one side, and I'm trying to tell him to calm down.
You've got to understand, I actually agree with you, but we can't be saying this. I like Ramsdale more than you do.
On that note, it's been a looser episode than I intended. We'll see how that goes down. Thank you for listening to another edition of the Spitballing Pod. We'll be back next week after a whole host of games that everyone's going to play twice again before we're on next week. So
we've got Old Trafford to go to.
Well, so
someone is going to be having a crisis by next week.
How this works is, if you're going to lose one, lose the midweek one, and conversation's shifted by the time we get to next week. So
noted.
Thank you. See you next week. Adios.